Hey, welcome back to another episode of Corinth in the Car. I'm Josh, and today with me is Adam, as usual, and Melissa is hopping on today. So, Melissa, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome back.
Glad to be here.
It's been a while, but welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the episode, the studio, the room, the table, all of it.
The last time it was just Luke and I, so things were really off the rails.
So I actually saw someone in the parking lot last night, and I said, yeah, Melissa's going to be on podcast tomorrow. And the first words out of his mouth, he said, hope there's not another cockroach.
Yep.
That happened last time. So no cockroaches today. Let's do a quick check-in. That's what we usually do. So how's your week going?
Good. Yeah. Busy getting ready for summer stuff and all those things.
This is what I always ask my kids. So you said good. What makes it good?
What's made it good is, knock on wood, nothing has gone terribly wrong. I feel like it's been a pretty middle of the week.
That's what you want. Yeah.
Yeah. So nothing has really taken too wrong. And the weather's been a little bit warmer, so that always helps, I think, my mood.
So your cat didn't poop on the rug at 5:30 in the morning?
It did not, especially because we didn't have a cat. We don't have a cat, so.
That's what happened to me this morning. Unfortunately, I have to report. So,
yeah. That's why you shouldn't have cats.
I know.
A dog would never.
I gave in. I love my wife.
Yep.
And my kids, they enjoy the cat, so.
Should just bought her a car.
More expensive.
That's cheaper. Yeah.
In the long run or in the short run, but maybe not less in the long run.
Definitely more fun.
Adam, how's your week been going?
Not too shabby.
All right. What's made it good?
Sunshine.
Yes. Mm. It's going to be 80 degrees today.
I saw that. Yeah.
No,
man.
No, it's supposed to rain all weekend, but.
Well, I'm hoping, fingers crossed, the forecast has gotten less and less rain Saturday. Because Dominic's first soccer game got rained out last week.
Oh.
Yeah, and he's super excited. So I'm hoping it's not the first 2 weeks of the season that get rained out. That would just be such a bummer.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Today's Pi Day, so happy Pi. Yep. 3.14.
Yep.
Great.
Did you know that?
I did know that, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you getting a pizza later? Pizza pie?
Yeah.
Probably not. I'll probably have peanut butter pie from Butterdutter.
Ooh.
Or cheesecake. I consider cheesecake pie. That might be a hot take. And our usual hot take person isn't here, but yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Anything else been delighting you lately or draining you lately? Those are a couple of questions we come back to quite frequently.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's just great to see the sun again. And man, you're right. I'm looking at it right now. Saturday and Sunday are looking clear.
Yeah, it cleared up. So Friday looks like the rain that was coming hopefully is less than originally was forecast. So hopefully the fields won't be as wet.
Yeah.
And then Saturday, hopefully the sun will dry. And his game is at 1, I think. And so hopefully even more time to, hopefully they can play. He's pumped. So.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Butter is good. Yeah. What else?
Yeah. Delighting. Hockey season. We're into our last, I think, 15 more games of the regular season and then playoffs.
I don't even know. When is the Stanley Cup?
I think the finals of the Stanley Cup were the first week of June last year. It is crazy how long their season is.
It's kind of like basketball.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
They play about 80 games.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's absolutely crazy. I think the Bruins are done. Shoot, it was end of April, beginning of May, because we lost in the first round of playoffs last year. So they were done earlier than everybody else.
I remember last year, because you, as a sports fan, are a Bruins fan. Mm-hmm. And then Iowa football, especially. Mm-hmm. But Iowa girls basketball,
yes,
women's basketball, was really good last year. And this year, again, I think?
Yeah, Caitlin Clark's breaking all kinds of records.
She beat Pistol Pete, right? All-time scoring.
Yeah, she's all-time scoring.
All-time collegiate basketball scoring record.
Yeah.
Pistol Pete got knocked off. So congratulations to Caitlin Clark. And she declared for the NBA.
Long-time listener of the podcast, Caitlin.
Yeah. Big-time fan.
Or the WNBA, I guess. So she's foregoing the senior year, I guess. Is that what that means? Or?
I have no idea. Don't ask me details. I know Caitlin Clark.
You're from Iowa, you should know.
I know, but I don't really basketball. I'll watch basketball, but it's definitely not one of my top favorite sports.
Right.
So I'll see things on Twitter because I follow a few Iowa, athletic people that report on all kinds of Iowa athletics. So I'll get my updates there, and that's about it for basketball.
Sure. Adam, you hitting the golf course soon?
Hopefully. Yeah. The whole weather thing is the kicker there.
That's it. Okay. Hey, if you are a regular in the podcast, we discussed the sermon that was preached on Sunday. If you're not, what we're going to do is kind of get into a little discussion and deeper dive of the sermon that was preached Sunday. Adam did that. We looked at the encounter Jesus had. We're in this series, Encounters, and looking at how people walked away from Jesus. So they either followed him or they didn't, and seeing what we can learn, because when you encounter Jesus, you don't stay the same. Yesterday, as you listen, was Bartimaeus, blind Bartimaeus.
Yeah.
It might have been a Bible coloring page.
I'm sure.
Okay, I'm sure somewhere. Kind of got me thinking, did you have a favorite Bible teacher growing up? Hmm. Melissa?
I mean, I had a few great children's pastors and people in my life. The names that come to mind are Dottie Harney. She was a children's pastor at my church in Columbia, Missouri, where we lived for a few years growing up. I even got to see her later. She lives in Kentucky now, so I got to see her as a grown-up a couple times and get to know more about being a children's pastor. It really helped me. But the other person that comes to mind is, her name is Patty Savage. She's was one of the youth group leaders at what I consider my home church, where I grew up most of the time. She has taught me so much, and she also makes delicious cookies, so that also helps.
That does help. The lesson sticks better when you eat a cookie.
Yes, when I'm eating a ginger snap cookie.
Are they the soft ginger snaps or the hard, like, snappy ones?
No, the soft ginger snaps.
Okay.
She also makes really good chocolate chip cookies. Mm.
Yes.
Don't get me started. She's really great.
Adam, growing up, did you have a Bible teacher that sticks out?
Man, I mean, no. Probably my grandma, Grandpa Turner, they taught sixth grade Sunday school at First Baptist Church in Carthage. So I remember that. And they were the ones that I had to memorize the books of the Bible.
Okay, nice.
In sixth grade. So they'd be the ones that would stand out the most, probably just because they're my grandma and grandpa more than anything.
Yeah, and so what was the preacher's name? I've heard you talk about him.
Dr. Cruz.
Dr. Cruz, always giving, no matter what the lesson was, making it into a tithing episode.
Yeah, it's crazy. That guy's still alive. My brother and I were talking about that the other day. It was like, we thought he was 80 whenever we were like 8.
Yeah. He's but been 80 for the past 20 years.
Longer than that, unfortunately. 35, 37.
I was trying to be nice. But,
but no, it's funny. We basically figured out that whenever he came to First Baptist in Carthage, he was just a handful of years older than I am right now.
Wow.
That makes me feel great.
Yeah, don't think about it too long.
All the kids that are looking at me now are like, man, that guy's old.
I know, right?
He's so old.
Not as young as we used to be, any of us.
So you're going to bring up Dorothy Meyer? That you're going to bring up?
That's who I was going to bring up. Right. Yeah. She had this thing called Brown Bag Sunday.
Okay.
And it was this like special holidays of the year. And she'd give us brown paper bags full of candy and stuff. And we'd get prizes if we did our like Bible reading through the week. And
nice.
Yeah, it was fun. So,
is she still alive? Do we know?
I think so.
I think she is.
I think so. Yeah. Mm. And her daughter, Pam, was my high school calculus teacher senior year.
That's right.
So, yeah. So, yeah. Anyway.
Talk about another one that felt like she was 80 years old 20 years ago.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
I mean, I know she wasn't. But.
She wasn't. But she had been around and doing it for so long. It was, I think, fourth grade or third grade, or maybe third and fourth or whatever. Maybe they had two grades together just for so, so long. It was kind of a staple at the church. And, I mean, everybody kind of knew Miss Dorothy. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, super cool.
She could be alive. She hasn't posted on Facebook since 2022, but that actually could just be a sign of wisdom.
There you go. I love it. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So Bartimaeus may be a coloring sheet, but Sunday he was the central character in our encounter. And Adam, you preached. And I remember a few months ago, we were sitting around the table looking at this series, we were going to do Encounters, and you called dibs. You're like, nobody else can have Bartimaeus. Yeah. I'm getting him. It's obviously a favorite. Yeah. So why? Why did you want?
It is that question that Jesus asks him, you know, what do you want me to do for you? And it's just, there's sometimes, you know, just words just jump off the page to you. And those are just, I think, really personal words. I think it's always something great to just think through that, you know, Jesus is actually asking us, what would you want me to do for you?
Mm-hmm.
And I love that Bartimaeus shot for the moon. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't ask for, you know, another meal. He didn't ask for some money or any of those other kind of things. He's like, mm-hmm. I want to see. Mm-hmm. So I love the personalness of the question and love the boldness of the request.
Yeah, and it's it's on the way to Jerusalem. This is the last mm-hmm. week, essentially, getting towards the last week of Jesus' life.
Yep.
Last week, Luke preached the interaction with the young ruler, the rich young ruler, also Mark 10. Yep. So it's kind of fascinating right there in the last week of mm-hmm. Jesus' life. So, yeah. Melissa, anything, I guess, stick out from yesterday? And then I'm going to ask you to read chapter 10, 50 to 52.
Yeah, I think just the, kind of like Adam said, how bold he was in his question. It reminds me of children. And, you know, earlier on in Mark chapter 10, when Jesus talks about, mm-hmm. You know, having faith like children, mm-hmm. he's basically like going all in. Barnabas is like, I got one shot and I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to let anybody stop me. And so it always reminds me of my call as a children's pastor. It's like, mm-hmm. that's why I do it. That's why I love being around kids and being in ministry with kids. It's because mm-hmm. it reminds you of like, they don't care about any limitations.
They're bold. Yeah.
They're bold. They're going to do what they want to do and shoot for the moon, like Adam said.
Yeah. And the kingdom of God belongs to these. So ask bold questions to our bold God. So why don't you read not quite all the verses that Adam did in the sermon yesterday, but 50, 51, and 52. Go ahead and read those.
Yeah. Bartimaeus threw aside his coat, jumped up, and came to Jesus. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked. My rabbi, the blind man said, I want to see. And Jesus said to him, go, for your faith has healed you. Instantly, the man could see, and he followed Jesus down the road.
Yeah, so much good there. And we'll get to some other kind of points later, but I just love, you know, that question once again, what do you want me to do for you? I want to see. Go, your faith has healed you, and instantly, I mean, that just hits me instantly, mm-hmm. boom. Here's this guy. Imagine the first thing you saw in your life was Jesus. Like, that's pretty wild.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know? So many connections in here. Adam, I loved how in the message before what Melissa had read, Jericho is where they are.
Yeah.
And you pointed out in the sermon, Jericho played a point in Israel's history in the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. And so let's remind or instruct, what was the Jericho story in the Old Testament and what's the connection here that's kind of cool?
Yeah, so it's before entering into the promised land. Jericho's a fortified city. And so this is the one, I can't remember how many times they had to walk around it, but it's like 7 days, right?
Yeah.
You know,
seven times on the seventh day.
Seven times on the seventh day, shouting, you know, for mm-hmm. What is the phrase? I know they chanted like Jericho for like, well, at least that's what I think they did. But
well, in the Judges story, there's a sword for the Lord and for Gideon.
Okay, that's what I'm confusing there.
Yeah. You might be thinking that.
Yeah.
They just marched around and then.
Yeah, so they just chanted Jericho. That's what they chanted. That's what we're going to say.
Yeah.
It's like Jericho. Jericho. Yeah.
I think there were giant like peas on the wall throwing slushies.
I was just going to say.
If you know the VeggieTales cartoon and they had French accents and making fun of them and a pretty funny nod, I believe, to the Monty Python is what they were nodding to there for sure.
Absolutely.
So anyway, yeah, a fascinating story because what you said was here the ancient Israel was entering into a promised land and receiving freedom. And then here is Bartimaeus, and he's receiving a new sort of kind of promised land.
Well, and it's not just Bartimaeus, it is Jesus is walking into Jerusalem.
He's going through Jericho to Jerusalem to do what he came to
give
Earth.
Ultimate victory.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's an interesting little connection that is there. The victory of God is near at this point for all, for not just for Bartimaeus, but for all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So I also found it fascinating. He is shouting, you know, Son of David, have mercy on me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the crowd is shushing him. And I love that you called them the librarian monitors.
Yeah.
They're shushing him.
Yeah.
But he won't shut up. And it's once again, like a kid, he's like, all right, I'll just do it louder.
Yeah, yeah.
He shouts louder. That can probably affect us all, though, right? If a crowd around us is telling us to be quiet, you're this or you're that, like stay in your place. And I love that Bartimaeus wasn't, I guess, influenced ultimately by that.
Yeah.
So what are some takeaways maybe that we can learn, or what were you going to add?
Well, I was just going to say, it may have been in one of the books your dad wrote about this, or in one of the chapters, I can't remember, where he was just talking about, the reason that the people are so upset is because they're embarrassed. And so just like a big city shuttles off homeless people whenever a big event's going on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
You know, it's just like we want to pretend like everything's good. Here you've got this incredible prophet, this guy that's doing all these amazing things, could be the Messiah. And so they're like, oh, my goodness, we got to shut this guy up. We don't want to be known as a town that just has, you know, blind beggars everywhere.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to hush him up. But what I actually find really interesting is that whenever Jesus, you know, stops and hears him and he's like, hey, tell him to come here. And they're all like, hey, man, this is great.
Cheer up, bro.
You know, he wants to see you. And so they're you can tell it's like, I don't know if it's insincerity or what it is that is there. The crowd is just fickle. And I think every time you read the Bible, that's just a great reminder. Every time you read the newspaper, it's a great reminder. Mm-hmm. You know, crowds are fickle people.
Yeah.
And so they just flip on a dime with that. And so, yeah, but I do think that there's something there of just persistence. And, you know, I think of I was reading the other day, the story of the Gentile woman who wanted healing for her daughter. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Is it the daughter? Mm-hmm. And Jesus is like, well, I came for the lost sheep of Israel mm-hmm. first. And she just stays persistent. I think of, and Jesus is like, okay, well then, you know, go on. Your faith has healed her. I mean, I don't remember if he says it exactly like he says it to Bartimaeus or not, but so you've got that, you've got the ask, seek, knock, you know, be the persistent widow, be the, I mean, all these things, there's just a persistence that, is there to where you just see people trying to wear out, and I mean this in a great sense, to wear out God, to wear out Jesus with just their audacity. And I think that God sees that and hears that, and I don't know if enjoys it is the right word, but
sure.
Rewards it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, then you have Paul in the epistles say things like perseverance gets you to hope, you know, and I think it's James, right? Perseverance must finish its work. Mm-hmm. Or is that, I'm confusing those two. There's a passage in James, and there's also a passage in Paul where they're saying the same thing, like persevere, because hope is coming and faith is coming after that. So,
yeah.
Thoughts?
It's funny when you're talking about persistence, and Adam kind of used the illustration of taking your kid to the movies and trying to quiet them down.
Or a church service.
Or a church service, or anywhere, probably. So I immediately thought of, there's this episode of Bluey. Yes, I love Bluey. I know I'm 25 years old, and it's a kid's show. But it is...
I'm 38, and I watch it sometimes without my kids.
Oh, yeah. It's iconic. I don't have children, just in case you guys, the listeners, didn't know. But I will still watch it front to back. Anyways, there's an episode where Bandit takes Bingo and Bluey to the movies. And Bingo just will not sit still. He's bouncing up and down. She's bouncing up and down in her chair. She's running around the theater, all this stuff. Till finally at the end of the episode, Bandit's just like, you know what? Just be yourself. Do your thing. Uh-huh. And so he's just letting her be yourself and have fun and things like that. And so, again, it's just that idea of like, you just be yourself, but also like keep being persistent and keep being acting like a kid. I think it's just always a good reminder that sometimes we take ourselves way too seriously.
Sure.
The crowd was like, you know, and sometimes you just got to act a little crazy in order to get accomplished what you need to.
Yeah. Well, I do think that, you know, that connection between childlike faith and Bartimaeus here, you know, I think it does, it fits with that. Mm-hmm. So that's the childlike persistence, you know. How about now? How about now? How about now? How about now?
Are we there yet?
Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Can I have this? Can I have this? Can I have this? You know.
Yeah, and even tying into last week, this guy with all the stuff, who cares about their stuff more, kids or adults? Probably adults.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, kids have their stuff. Don't get me wrong on that. I got kids and they want their stuff. But I've seen, like, my own kids be able to give stuff away a whole lot easier than, you know, I would initially want that.
Yeah.
And so sometimes even, you know, faith like a child and the kingdom is kind of upside down, different than we would perhaps initially think. So I want to talk about the coat here for a little bit, the coat or the cloak. Some might not know this. It was a reminder to me for sure. He threw away his cloak, but Adam, why was that important?
So it's probably, I mean, there's a chance that it's like his source of warmth in his bed. It's probably his bed, but the idea from what I've read in Jericho, he probably didn't need it for warmth. Mm-hmm. It's probably more of a bed, but it's also like his tin can. Mm-hmm. It's the thing to where he's collecting.
It's the guitar case.
It's the guitar case. You know, yep. It's the bucket. It's all those things to where it is where he is collecting money as people come by. And he's like, hey, have mercy on me. Have mercy on me. Show me some love. Give me some food. Give me some money. And so whenever he throws that away, he's leaving his life of begging behind.
Yeah.
And he's like, the one thing I need isn't this. It's this guy over here that I can't see yet, but this is what I need more than anything.
Yeah. And I love earlier in the message you had said, what he lacks in sight, mm-hmm. he has in insight.
Yes.
So he ironically saw what the crowd didn't see.
Well, and that is what's funny about it. So rich young ruler mm-hmm. doesn't see who Jesus really is. Mm-hmm. James and John, while they know who Jesus is, they don't really see what he's...
They're misinterpreting what Messiah means.
They're misinterpreting what Messiah means. And you go through, even in, I think it's chapter 8, I can't remember the story off the top of my head, but there's like this just kind of theme of people just not seeing Jesus for who he really was. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a blind man on the way to the last week mm-hmm. to fully... be able to see who Jesus is. So it's fascinating.
So Melissa, we'll start with you. What are some of the cloaks or the coats, you know, of 2024 that people need to throw away? Mm-hmm. What are some of those things that are maybe too much of our identity that we just hold on to and we need to throw them away?
Yeah. The thing that came to mind is I struggle with a lot of anxiety. I'm not closed off about that. I'm very open talking about that. And so that can become a lot of my identity and a lot of what I see life through, just the fear of a lot of stuff.
Sure.
And so throwing that off in 2024 has been a goal of mine. I talk about how my word for the year is thrive. And so just the idea of taking off all of that fear and anxiety, it's easier said than done, obviously. And we can talk more in detail about how I do that later. But that's the thing that I would say a lot of people can and should take off.
Yeah, and stress, anxiety, all those kind of real things are not bad. They are signs to get something fixed and to bring it to God. And to, you know, it's like in some senses, it's like a warning light in your car. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. You just, you get it fixed and you address it. And so, yeah, I think that's good. Adam, what else jumps to your mind when you think, what is a cloak that maybe, you know, it'd be easy to hold on to and say, well, it's easier to stay this way rather than to change? Because that's what, I mean, Bartimaeus did. He said, you know, I am willing to give up everything I'm familiar with. I mean, I don't know how old he was. Do we have an idea?
Not that I've seen, yeah.
But I mean, if he's blind, then he was blind for a while.
Right.
And this is what he's been doing for a while.
Yeah.
And so it's just saying, I'm not going to be this way anymore.
Yeah. I think, and whenever you get to the question of what do you want me to do for you, I think that really those two things go together, because I think one of the cloaks that we hold on to, or that I see people holding on to, is victimhood.
Mm. Yeah.
Finding your identity in your... in your victimhood.
In your wound.
In your wound.
Yeah.
Okay. And part of that is just a philosophy that has grown more pervasive in our culture, that that is your identity. And if you don't have a wound, then that means you're in a position of power, and power is bad. And so you always want to be identified with the marginalized.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so I think that the victimhood thing of just finding our identity in either, you know, something that we feel has happened to us, or not even just feels, that has happened mm-hmm. to us, or that we feel is broken about us, or any of those kind of things, just is a something that we can hold on to, and we forget that like flies in the face of Scripture, you know, to where we're more than conquerors. You know, we're victorious, mm-hmm. we're in Christ, we've got all these things. That, yeah, those things may have happened. Those things may even still be true. But through Christ, mm-hmm. he supersedes all of that. And he gives us a new identity. And we don't have to be victims. Mm-hmm. We don't have to be identified by our blindness. We get to be identified as, you know, child, I'm a son of God, daughter of God kind of thing.
It's good. So yeah.
I think that's probably a pretty big jacket that people hold on to.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about you brought up that question, what do you want me to do for you? And in the sermon, you brought out how there's really a comparison and a contrast between a little bit before James and John. Mm-hmm. Is it the Mark version or a parallel Matthew or Luke where it's actually their mom that's coming?
I think it's Matthew.
And asking.
Yeah, Matthew says they put their mom up to the ask.
Salome or Salome or whatever. Yeah. And if you piece together the synoptics, you can figure out with, you know, not 100% confidence, but 99% maybe that this is actually Jesus's aunt.
Right.
Asking for his own cousins. Will you sit at, you know, can they sit at the right hand and the left hand?
Yeah. So Matthew rats out the mom. Luke doesn't rat anybody out. Mm-hmm. And then Mark rats out John and James. So
there you go. Yeah. And then later we find it out when there's women at the cross and who they were and stuff. Anyway, who Salome or Salome was. But anyway, what's the comparison and contrast here? It's kind of fascinating to think about. You know, Jesus asks James and John, what do you want me to do?
Yeah, they ask for a favor. Mm-hmm. And so that they aren't saying, have mercy on us, but they are making a request. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus says, I think the NLT translates it, what is your request? But it really, if you read I think it's Matthew and Luke, both phrase the question the same in these accounts of, you know, what do you want me to do for you? And so it is an interesting thing. You know, whenever they're asked the question, they want glory and honor and power. Bartimaeus is just, I just want to see. Mm-hmm. That's just what I want. And so they want glory. He wants mercy is really what it comes down to. And it is interesting what all three of those guys do, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. They juxtapose those together.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking Jesus kind of gave both of them, he asked, what do you want? Mm-hmm. But he didn't give both of them what they wanted.
Yeah.
He gave them both sort of what was best.
Yeah, because like with James and John, he tells them essentially, you don't know what you're asking.
Right.
Yeah.
You think that's what you want, but you don't know what you're asking. But in a sense, I don't know that they got the right hand seats by any of those other kind of things, but he does say, can't remember exactly how he phrases that, but they're going to get some of that.
Yeah.
It's just not going to be what they think.
Right. And so as I was just thinking through it, I just thought, man, how cool that is that, you know, we talk about scriptures like Romans 8:28, that God works together for good, all things for those who love him, and how even here, that's a demonstration of Jesus in grace and mercy, giving what is best according to faith and what he's, you know, sometimes if God tells us a no, we think God doesn't like me.
Yeah.
And certainly that was not the case with Jesus and James and John. Like when he said no to them,
right?
It's not because he didn't like them.
Yeah.
It's because he had different and better plans for them.
Correct.
So.
Well, they still had the old mindset on, you know, of who they thought the Messiah was going to be and how he was going to act and what kind of kingdom he was going to install. And Jesus is like, you guys still aren't getting it. Whereas Bartimaeus understands. I mean, he might not understand all the details. He hasn't been traveling around like James and John have been with Jesus, but he knows that, hey, this guy's something, and he's the son of David. He's going to come. And so he just wants to be, I mean, an ordinary guy. Like he's not even asking for a position of power in the town. He's not asking for anything, but just the ability to see so that he can finally start to live a somewhat normal life in Jericho.
Yeah. Jesus asks a lot of questions. In fact, like it was a teaching method for him too. And so I wanted to bring this up. Rosalie, a few days ago, she asked me this question. I was really proud of 7-year-old here. She said, if God knows everything, why does he ask so many questions? He's like, all these Bible stories, she said, that we're doing at church and things, like, God asks us a lot of questions. So I'm going to ask you guys, why does God, or Jesus when he teaches, like, why does he ask us so many questions? What are some of his reasons?
I think there is just something good about a question, and it causes us to think and to become maybe more owners of what we're learning. Whereas if I just tell you, and Jesus does a lot of telling, but he also asks
a lot of questions. Also asks a lot of questions. Last week, you know, why do you call me good?
Yeah. But the questions are never for his sake; they're always for our sake.
Right.
And so I think that's what it is. It's just another. What is it? Was it Aristotle? Was it he the one that asked a lot of questions, or was it Plato? Or
I don't remember.
But you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And so there's like, it's just a philosophy of teaching, just getting your student to think through. And once again, you become more of an owner whenever you're wrestling through a question than you do whenever somebody just gives you something.
Yeah. That'll last in your brain more. I think you'll, like you said, take more ownership of that belief or that that thought. You can draw your own conclusions and learn. Because I think growing up so many years as a kid, it was just kind of, I was told a lot of these things about the Bible and who Jesus was. And so, you know, I got to college and I was like, yeah, that's correct. Like I didn't ever look at it deeper. And so college gave me an opportunity to unpack those questions. Cause my professors would ask me a question of like, is that correct? Or is that the only thing? And I'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, yes, of course it is. This is what I've been told my whole life, but I never really let that sink in deeper to be able to explain even to somebody else why I believed that. So that's where questions come in a lot of value.
Yeah. And I think sometimes a question reveals, it kind of helps you realize maybe I should have asked something different.
Yeah.
You know, not just to have ownership of whatever is taught, but like maybe I'm asking the wrong question. So keep asking questions, all you people out there. Questions are awesome. So one final thing before we get to the application point of the sermon, I just was fascinated by this. It says that Bartimaeus immediately followed Jesus in that moment. Can you imagine just you're laying on the road, you're blind, next moment you're not, and you're like, yep, I'm going to throw my coat away, and I'm starting to walk right now. Mm-hmm. So what do you think that was like for the crowd, for Bartimaeus, for Jesus, for who was with him? What do you imagine?
I think that's why the crowd was there.
Yeah.
You know, they were hoping to see something, you know.
Okay.
And so I think that's why they were there. For Bartimaeus, you know, at the beginning of the message, I showed a few videos of these were kids, you know, getting their glasses put on for the first time so they can actually see their mom or see their dad.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty cool videos. But I think of the other videos that we just didn't have time to show were just like these grown men who've been colorblind their whole life, and like their family gives them the glasses that are supposed to let. Yeah. And like these grown men just like crying because it's like, that's green. That's yellow. That's red. You know, my goodness, I've been missing this my entire life, you know, thing. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of got to imagine, you know, Bartimaeus doing that of just like, holy cow. Now, if he's been born blind his entire life, then if he was born blind and he's been blind the entire time, then I can imagine that. If he lost his eyesight when he was 13, you know, I think it's a little bit just a more redemptive, just like, oh my goodness, I haven't seen this in so long.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the obviously the excitement would just be something else. And then he probably realized that he needed to comb his hair or something like that.
Yeah.
I haven't brushed my teeth in a while. Oh my goodness.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really have a lot to add to that.
I've been wearing this.
Yeah.
This doesn't match.
Yeah.
This is polka dots and
stripes.
These are
two different sandals,
We've got Nike sandals on and Adidas toga.
Yeah, just rereading over the text.
My logos don't match.
Rereading over the text, though, it talks about how it was as Jesus and his disciples left town that this event happened. So like Adam said, the crowd was waiting for something. And obviously Jesus didn't really, that we know of, take a lot of time to stop in Jericho and heal people or do things. And so I'm sure the crowd was still following him, waiting for something. And I probably got something they didn't expect.
Mm-hmm. I'm imagining Bartimaeus like Will Ferrell as Elf.
Yeah.
He's just like a child enjoying every single little thing.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So application, Adam, you talked about a couple different things here. God, first of all, is not limited by our limitations. A great turn of phrase there. So let's talk about that a little bit. Fanny Crosby was the main story you told. So remind everybody real quick her story. And then the question follow-up for both of you would just be, what other stories come to mind of God doing amazing things through, quote, limited people?
Yeah, wrote over 8,000 hymns, this lady did. and some of them really famous. A lot of, I mean, if you write 8,000, they're not all going to be winners. But
yeah, that's right.
But yeah, just her faith in that, you know, why hasn't God healed you? And it's like, no, God did a great thing for me. Because this actually, because of my blindness, he has shut me in with himself, and I've learned more about the love of Jesus than if I could see. And so,
that's,
yeah, just
great perspective.
Imagine that, a poet writing, saying things, something like that. But so, yeah, just a fantastic just reminder of, in spite of our limitations, sometimes through our limitations, that God is able to do incredible things. Moses was a horrible communicator in his own eyes, and God uses him to write the maybe 5 most important books of all time. Right? Potentially?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, it's used across multiple religions. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know.
Most influential, at least.
Most influential, yeah. You know, and so just all those things. And so I think that we've all got it. You know, it can be your age. It can be your health. It can be physical limitations. It can be mental capacity. It can be past. It can be, you know, experiences, all those things that we could look at and say, you know, I'm a failure. I'm this, I'm that. And, you know, how could God use me? And it's like, well, that might actually be in the right spot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I think God specializes in using quote unquote limited people to accomplish his glory.
Yeah.
What's the stories, people? What do you think?
The story that comes to mind from the Bible, it's my one of my favorite people is Esther. There's not a lot of, I feel like, women leaders that are talked about a lot in the Bible. I mean, there is, but just people who literally, like, she was a young Jewish woman who got thrown into, you know, this kingdom and saved an entire nation just because, you know, she did what God asked her, even though she didn't want to. Like, the text is very clear. She's like, I don't think this is going to end well, but she, again, just pushes past those, and God uses that for his good.
Yeah, that's good. I think of someone like a Mother Teresa, which is, ironically, she's not as known anymore. Like, if I were to ask my middle school CLC class who Mother Teresa is, they have no clue. No clue at all.
That's shocking.
But she was just this tiny woman in stature who was a giant of faith and stood up to presidents and all sorts of things. And her quote, Adam, wasn't something like, I'm just a little pencil in the hand of God.
Something.
And he writes the story. And
something like that. Yeah.
It's, yeah, there's no, she said something else, like, there's no great people. There's just small people who God does great things through.
Right.
Something like that. I'm getting it wrong right now, of course, but
sounds great.
Yeah. So she would be an example. I think of also, here's another story. There's a guy named William Wilberforce. You know that name?
Uh-huh.
So he was like Abraham Lincoln before Abraham Lincoln, who freed slaves over in England, like, long before it happened here in the States. And once again, he was like tiny. He was like 5'2" or something, and 120 pounds, something like that. But just this giant of faith, and everything he did came from his Christian faith. And he was very limited,
right,
but did an incredible stuff and paved the way for slaves to be freed here in America and all that stuff too. So how do we practically, I guess, flip the script in our life? How do we see our own limitations as ways for God to work?
Mm-hmm.
How do we do that?
I would go to, let's see, the 1st or 2nd Corinthians, but when I'm weak, I'm strong.
2nd Corinthians 12.
2nd Corinthians 12. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his strength is made perfect in my weakness, and his grace is sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just remind myself over and over again that whenever it's in my power, it might be okay. But if it's going to be through God's power, it can be transcendent. And too, I think it also reminds us that not to think too highly of ourselves as well.
Yes.
And to make ourselves self-important.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's just the reminder that is always there. It's just like, I think our weaknesses are there to help us remember we aren't intended to do all of this on our own and through our own strength. So.
Yeah, you just reminded me, there's a book, a Tim Keller book, imagine that,
yep,
called The Freedom of Self-Forgetfulness,
yes,
The Path to True Christian Joy.
Yeah, it's a really tiny book.
you all could pick it up and read it today.
Yeah.
And be done with it today because it's that short.
Yeah.
But just real, real good stuff. Melissa, how do you flip the script and look at a weakness or a limitation in your life as something that God can use, a way for God to work?
Yeah, so 2 Corinthians 12 is one of my favorite passages of scripture. It hit me at a really great time. And like Adam said, it helps flip the script a lot for me, particularly for people like me who I lovingly refer to as recovering perfectionists, because it took a lot of, again, the fear away from me about making mistakes and just making a wrong step. Just this idea that my limitations aren't going to like completely destroy me, I think it has really helped. Practically speaking, I've been in therapy for about 3 years, and that has been a great, great value to me. Just the idea of learning the limitations that I think I have, or the things I think of as limitations, other people also have those things. Mm-hmm. So I'm not isolated. And because that's how I felt,
okay,
you know,
sure, yeah.
I'm not isolated in those limitations. And so we're all in this together, you know, that mindset of we're all in this together. You're not alone in what you consider. I go to God's word and read stories again about how God, that's the whole Bible, about how God used people with different limitations, with people who messed up, like small ways and major ways, and still God used those people to accomplish his glory.
Yeah, that's right. We could name person after person after person in the Bible who did great things, even though they also did some bad things.
Yeah.
So second point here was just to seek to know the God who sees you. And that's what Bartimaeus was doing. He was seeking out the Son of David, the Messiah, Jesus, who, you know, I guess Jesus saw Bartimaeus before he technically saw Jesus physically.
Yeah.
But Bartimaeus saw him.
Right.
And he knew Jesus saw him. And so a couple of questions here. What do you do personally when you don't feel it? Like when you don't feel like God sees you, how do you keep seeking?
I listen to worship music that has been a value to me a few years ago. Sometimes I'll drive around in my car and listen to worship music, like really cranked up. But other times I literally will just lay on the floor and listen to worship music. I have very clear memories of a hard time in my life a few years ago where I just laid on the floor and I listened to music and cried, to be honest, and was just like, God, where are you? And just the lyrics of those particular songs really spoke to me and reminded him that he is there, that he sees me. And so things like that. Also just reading scripture and journaling, getting those thoughts from my brain onto a page has really helped to see it out in front of me. Even the question of like, God, where are you? Like written out on a page just really helps me see like, no, God's here, you know, even if I don't feel like he is. So those are some practical things that I do.
Great. Adam, what would you add when the feelings aren't there? How do you keep seeking?
Yeah. It's just the reminder that you can act your way into feeling more than you can feel your way into acting. So for me, it's just maintaining the rhythm that no matter what, just same time, same place, just keeping it going and knowing that there are seasons of dryness or where it feels like you're just logging pages for Jesus.
Sure.
But that there will be a breakthrough and that it's, you know, you go back to the habit series. It's like, it'd be horrible to stop at 211 degrees
before the boiling point.
Before the boiling point.
Yeah.
So that's, I think it's just the,
That's a good reminder.
Just the persistence.
Yeah.
And that's, it's the same persistence that, Bartimaeus has.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, people are telling him to be quiet, to stop yelling, to stop crying out, quit bothering Jesus. Mm-hmm. And, while you may not have a crowd that's telling you that, your own mind can tell you that.
Yeah.
Because it's like, hey, you're not getting anything out of this. What good is this doing for you? I mean, you've been reading your Bible, you know, every day for 3 straight weeks and, you know, you don't feel any closer to God. Yeah. So what are you doing? You know, and it's just like, that's whenever we have to cry out even louder.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the things like those daily declarations that we've talked about before were just truths that if we just even say them out loud. I mean, That's helpful. You hear yourself say it. And I love that line, you act your way into feeling.
It's
a whole lot easier than feeling your way into acting.
Yeah.
Because if you wait for the feeling, probably never going to come.
Probably never going to come.
Yeah.
No, you're just going to be riding the high of mountaintop experiences, and that's no way to live a life of faith.
So one more question. We say that God sees us. How do we know that?
How do we know that?
How do we know that God sees us?
Well, I would the 30,000 foot answer would be, I mean, for God so loved the world, he sent his only son, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so if he didn't see us and see us in our need, then there wouldn't be that reality mm-hmm. that Jesus does go to the cross for us. So I think that I think that's probably the anchor for my soul, no matter what I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Melissa, how about you? How do you answer that question? How do you know that God sees you? Cause you've been through seasons where you don't feel it.
Yeah.
How do you know it even when there's no feeling?
I think looking back now, obviously I can see that he was there. So just reflecting on how God has shown up in past seasons will remind me that he still sees me now. I also see him through people that God has placed in my life. During those difficult seasons, I had 3 or 4 people who we would regularly go out to lunch on particularly difficult days and just rant to one another, talk things through, just get things off our chest. But then also those people would challenge me back with a different perspective of that, like, you know, God still sees you or whatever it is. And just the idea of people in your life hearing you and acknowledging what you're going through. I saw God in those moments, and still to this day, I've got people now that I see God through, that even if it's not something specifically spiritual that they're saying to me, just the idea of somebody that God has placed in my life who sees me, who acknowledges me, who loves mm-hmm. me, shows me that God sees me.
Yeah. I'll talk about just one thing I'm doing this year, reading through New Morning Mercies again, mm-hmm. is that Paul David Tripp devotional. And a couple years ago when I bought it, I bought the one that has like journaling margins in it.
I didn't know that they made ones like that.
Yeah, it's nice. It's got some journaling margins. And so not every day, but certain days when the devotional content was related really specifically to maybe something our family was going through. It was 2 years ago when I did it last. Mm-hmm. I journaled that out in the margin. And so now 2 years later, I can see how God has worked.
Yeah.
So I would just echo and reiterate the truth of writing things down is so helpful, because when you don't remember, mm-hmm. sometimes you can actually see physically that mm-hmm. God has seen you before. And
yeah.
So you just write it down, make an account. And of course, all the other things you said too, music and stories and people and for God so loved the world, you know, Adam, you said it in the sermon, Psalm 121, I lift my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? Well, it comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. So, yeah, the point being, how do you know God sees you? Well, you lift your eyes up higher than your current experience.
Correct.
So, great stuff. Anything else to add?
No, I just real quickly about journaling, writing things down. If you're not like a physical paper pen person, keep a note in your phone. I mean, type things out on your phone and keep them. People know where their phone is at more than they probably do a journal. I mean, I know where my journal's at, but you know, for those people, just practically speaking, there's more than one way to keep an account of what God has done in your life and to be able to look back.
Yeah.
Pictures, whatever it is.
Bottom line from yesterday, desperation is a doorway to faith.
Mm-hmm.
So explain that just really super briefly. I mean, I think it's kind of self-explanatory, but.
Yeah, I'd hope so.
Yeah.
But yeah. yeah, no, that's just what you see in Barnabas's. Mm-hmm. Bartimaeus's life is he's just desperate.
Mm-hmm.
And the desperation is what leads him to call out. And it's what leads him to, you know, go from on the side of the road to walking along the road.
Yeah.
And so, which is kind of the metaphor for discipleship. Mm-hmm. We're on the sideline and then we're walking along.
Yeah. Well, and what I love about it is desperation is also a doorway to doubt. If you let it be,
mm-hmm.
it's a doorway. So yeah. It's your choice kind of which door you walk through.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to that line. Doubt is not toxic to faith. It's mm-hmm. unexpressed doubt.
Right.
It's doubt that is only dealt with on Google
mm-hmm.
Instead of with a Christian community. And so, yeah, desperation, if you go to the right place, and that's where I love, we didn't talk about it really here, but the Dwayne video was just so inspiring.
Yeah.
His story is so incredible. So loved that. If you were at Corinth and got to see it, if not, catch the sermon, go back and watch that. It's good mm-hmm. stuff. The challenge was make space for the question, what do you want me to do for you? As if Jesus was asking that to you. And so mm-hmm. Adam, just wanted to get your perspective a little bit. this question for Bartimaeus was someone who is kind of not following yet. He was a new follower. And so that question pretty much makes sense for somebody right away. But what would you say to somebody who's been a Christian for a while? How does that question hit them differently?
Well, I think that it just got to think through it. And so, you know, is there healing in your life that needs to take place? Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's physical. Maybe it's spiritual. Maybe it's emotional. Maybe there's an addiction, you know, those things. Maybe it is, maybe the prayer is you just want God to open your eyes so that you can see as he sees and see people in your life as people in need of God's care and God's grace, or just, I want to be able to see where you're at work and where you're active, or, you know, I want you to give me a fresh vision for my business or my family. And it might not be for you. You know, it may be there's somebody, maybe it's your one, maybe it's a family member that it's just like, I want you to heal them. I want you to open their eyes. I want you to do these things. And you're an advocate on their behalf. And so it's just, I think it's just really just stopping to think. It's like if Jesus were to stop and stand in front of you and just say, what do you want me to do for you? What would you say?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. All right. Melissa, anything to add here?
Yeah, I'll just say, I'm still young, but I've been a Christian most of my life, and I don't have a crazy conversion. You know, I was blind, now I see moments in my life. So I would just encourage people who have been following Jesus for a long time to figure out how you can use your story, even if you feel like you don't have one, because you do. That was something I had to come to the realization as well, of how Jesus has worked in your life and how you can use that story to bring other people into the faith. Maybe it's your one. And maybe that's, you know, like Adam also said, maybe it's something that needs to be healed for you. It's not to minimize what you have gone through or what has been done to you. But there is so much value and benefit waiting on the other side of that healing for you that we don't want you to stay where you're at. In that victimhood. So I would encourage you, we're not trying to minimize what you've gone through and the trauma that you have, but as somebody who has healed from some of the things that she has gone through, I can say on the other side of it, how much you can thrive if you just take that step.
Cool. Very good. All right. So that's a wrap on the sermon, Bartimaeus. It was a great story. Leading up next week, we'll look at Pilate. And then the week after that, it'll be Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. So we're excited. Don't forget, like Melissa said, invite your one. Those cards are all around. We're going to have just a little bit of fun today before we get out of here. And here's the connection. All right. Bartimaeus saw Jesus, or he heard Jesus before he saw him.
Okay.
He put it together by what he heard. So we're going to see.
So scared.
We're going to see if you can recognize some animal noises here. All right.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. So let's test our sound here first with, there we go. We got something on there. That's a wolf. Can you hear that wolf?
Mm-hmm.
Wolf's crying. Okay. I'll pause that.
I have to say it's a wolf. That's like a dog. Is it, if it's generally first, correct?
The first to five wins. Okay.
Okay.
First to guess the animal noises win. That's why we've pumped it through the system here. So you at home can play along as well. Here is number one. What animal is this? Identify it, and you get the first point.
That's going to be like a hog.
Pig, yeah.
Warthog.
The same animal.
I had no clue.
Dory might know this one.
It's a whale.
The humpback whale. All right. Okay. So there you go. All right. What about...
Is it a tiger or a lion?
That's a wild boar, all right,
oh, wild
ladies
boar.
And gentlemen. All right. I think this one will be a little easier for you. So Adam's up one to nothing right now.
1-0. That's a rattlesnake.
Rattlesnake. All right, up 2-0. All right, let's go to, let me get there. All right, all the suspense.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
I know, here we go.
That's a hyena.
3-0.
I never do well on these end of the podcast.
Oh,
games.
End of the podcast.
My brain
right.
freezes.
Your brain freezes. That's okay. Listen very closely.
That's an owl.
Oh, there we go.
I got it. Thanks for letting me have that one, yeah. Adam. I know you were just sitting quiet. Let me have that one.
All right. Let me get to it. Here we go. You ready?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. That's like sheep, lamb,
yeah.
Goat.
Goat. There we go.
It threw me off that there was multiple.
Okay. And here we go. Adam could win on this next one here.
Okay. Put me out of my misery, Adam.
Ready?
Yeah. Oh, that's a hawk.
A hawk. All right. All you Atlanta Falcons fans, it's kind of like that. Kind of like it. Not really.
They don't ever get to hear it because it's only whenever a touchdown score.
Only. Yeah.
Hey, they got
not
some people
a, not
coming
a whole
in,
lot. All right.
In.
So
Kirk Cousins, baby.
Yeah.
There we go. Here's one more. Just for fun. There's a duck for you. Okay.
There you go.
So hopefully you recognize some animal noises. That was just for fun. But anyway, we're having fun here. We're having a good Thursday. It's going to be 80 degrees. Go enjoy the weather.
God bless.
Hope you're having a good weekend. And by the time you listen, I hope you had a good weekend and we saw you at Corinth. If not, we hope to see you this next week in person and right back here on the podcast next week. Until then, we love you lots. We like you. Have a good one.